The US President Donald Trump has rejected calls from within the Republican Party for a temporary reopening of government agencies as the longest government shutdown in US history drags on. The partial shutdown was triggered by the president's demand for funding to build a wall along the Mexican border. And while politics play out, the backlog of migrants looking to enter the country is also building up. The Mexican border city of Tijuana has become host to the masses of people travelling in migrant caravans. This week's episode of Foreign Correspondent tells some of the stories of the many thousands of people stuck at the border. Eric Campbell is the reporter. Welcome back to Breakfast.
Hello.
Eric, this partial government shutdown, of course, is linked to this migrant crisis unfolding at the border. Can you describe for us the scenes that you were greeted with when you first arrived in Tijuana?
Well, we've been following some of the caravans as they progressed from Mexico City and from Veracruz. And they had been getting overall pretty much a nice warm welcome from their Mexican neighbours. When they reached Tijuana, it became very different. The welcome disappeared. There's a great hostility from the people there. The migrants, when we first arrived, were camped in very filthy open-air camps right on the border fence. They've since been moved back into hostels, away from public view, away from the border. A lot of suspicion from the local people about who is in the caravans. And a lot of the migrants have actually been leaving Tijuana to go to other border towns because they don't feel safe there anymore. Those who are in Tijuana are hunkered down for a very long wait. So when we talk about the government shutdown going down for 23 days now, the migrants are resigned to waiting months and months and months in Tijuana for two reasons. One is the processing of asylum claims has almost come to a stop, both through the scope of the numbers and US policy to slow down the applications. Secondly, a lot of these migrants just cannot go back to the Central American countries they fled, because they fled for very good reasons. They were being threatened with violence from the gangs, and they know if they do go back, there's a very good chance they'll die, and some migrants who've been deported back have actually been killed. So it is the classic Mexican standoff. It can go on for months and months and months more.
You mentioned the suspicion of the locals there in Tijuana about these migrants. Donald Trump, of course, has fueled a lot of suspicion around them. He's described them as bad people, drug dealers, terrorists. What did you find? What sort of people are making this journey?
Well, we certainly didn't see any of the gangsters. We didn't see the many heavily tattooed people that you will see in the poorer barrios of San Salvador or in Guatemala or in Honduras. They're basically people who are fleeing the gangs. Now, a lot of them would have been involved with the gangs at some point, because if you're a kid in San Pedro Sula or in San Salvador, the chances are, if you live in a poor area, you will be forced to sell drugs for the gangs. You will be forced to be lookouts for them. If you don't cooperate with the gangs, you can be killed. A couple of the people we featured, there was a 13-year-old boy who had fled on his own because he refused to work with the gangs. The house he was staying in was fired on. He and an older friend went into hiding and then jumped onto a truck in the caravan to escape. So that's the kind of reality of it. They're not gangsters themselves, but they have been associated with the gang. They're trying to get away from the gangs who are trying to kill them. So
his name was Daniel. Why was he alone? Where were his parents?
Well, his mother's in jail. She, according to him, sold drugs for MS-13, one of the main gangs in Central America. He had been staying at the home of another family. His best friend, Victor, an older boy in the family, had sort of taken him under his wing. They'd both run foul of the gangs. They both refused to work for them. They got death threats. They ignored them. And then they tried to kill them. So these kids basically went into hiding. And Victor, the older boy, told us that his mother had been sent a letter from one of the gangs saying, if they come back, not only will they kill them, they'll kill the family as well. Mm. Now, you can say these are just stories, but we did see other people who had similar stories and had death threats sent to their phones. We kept hearing the same stories over and over and over. If you cross the gangs, they will kill you and you have to get out. So when a caravan passes through, people just get on board. Most of the people who have come are not from San Pedro Sula, the city where it all began. Only 200 people left that day. 6,000 people joined in as it traveled to Honduras, Guatemala, towards Mexico, you know, for that long trip to the U.S. border. So there is a great deal of fear across the three countries of the Northern Triangle, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. If they see an opportunity to escape without having to pay people smugglers, without having to risk the dangers of travelling through Mexico on their own through cartel country,
and is the sense, Eric,
a sensible option.
And is that the sense that if there's safety in numbers, if they join this caravan, that their chances are improved?
Absolutely. Because if you're travelling with 2,000 people, it's a very disorganised exodus. They try to hitch on trucks. They try to catch buses together. But they always have a place they will head to each night. They'll camp down together for safety. They'll stay with each other. We were filming one of the caravans in Veracruz province, and a local business has donated a lot of buses to take them, half of them, to Mexico City. They wouldn't leave without the other half. They wouldn't split the caravan because, you know, their safety depends on being, you know, part of a bigger picture. So they will stay together. If you compare that to the experience of people who pay people smugglers, the coyotes, it's very expensive and very dangerous. People have been left to die in the desert. People who are solo travellers who have tried to cross these countries and through Mexico, many of them have been killed by the Theta cartel, a drug cartel which is now branching into kidnapping and people trafficking, takes people who are travellers, forces them to be couriers of drugs across the border. So really the only sensible option for people with no money is to try to join one of these caravans. And this whole phenomenon, which has started happening big time since October, is continuing. There is another big caravan on its way to Tijuana right now.
And what are the conditions that they face along this journey, particularly in that part known as the Road of Death? Did they describe to you what they were experiencing on the road?
Yes, there were cases. A lot of people who had been with the caravan had just disappeared. Stragglers in the group, people who sort of jumped on the back of the wrong truck, had not made it to the next campsite. There were stories of one bus that just disappeared. So there are, you know, bandits in the area who will prey on people. A lot of cases of rape of women travelling on the caravan, not as much, you know, more safer than if they were travelling on their own, but still very dangerous. When they do find places to sleep, and it's usually the city administration allows them to go to a farm or a park somewhere, local people will provide them with food. They've depended very much on the generosity of the Mexican people. Until they got to Tijuana, where they found it was running very thin. Tijuana just was not equipped to deal with an influx of as many as 10,000 people. They're quite resentful of the migrants there now. They don't see any solution to this because Trump is insisting he will not let them in. The migrants themselves are saying they cannot go back, so they are stuck in Tijuana and other border towns saying, we're just going to wait here for as long as we have to because we have no other choice.
And how well informed are they about the political manoeuvrings going on in the US?
Look, not at all. I mean, you know, one boy, Victor, he told us that he believes he will get asylum because he's heard the president will open the doors for him. They're not following, you know, the inner workings of Washington. They don't have, you know, they have phones, but they don't have Wi-Fi. They live off rumours. You'll have NGOs going down there and trying to advise them of their rights. But there's a lot of wishful thinking in this whole exodus. These are people that come from the poorest parts of Central America. They're not well-educated. They're not very switched on politically. And they're just following the crowd. There's no leaders in these caravans. It's all very spontaneous and chaotic. So, you know, they are getting advice from some people. Don't go ahead. Go back home. Go somewhere else. Settle in Mexico. But very few are doing that. They are determined to go to the border and wait and try to get across.
All right. Well, Eric, thank you for your time today and congratulations on getting those stories.
Thank you.
Eric Campbell is the host of ABC's Foreign Correspondent. Walk in Their Shoes airs on Foreign Correspondent on ABC TV at 8 o'clock tonight, tomorrow night, I should say, and on the ABC News Channel at 7:30 on Saturday, the 19th of January, 5:30 Australian Eastern Daylight Time on January the 20th, and also on iView. So plenty of opportunities to catch up with that.